There is also the problem that access to telescopes is always at a premium, and historically measuring red shifts has been notably costly in telescope time. It could take all night to get a single exposure. In consequence, astronomers have sometimes been compelled, or willing, to base conclusions on notably scanty evidence. In cosmology, as the journalist Jeffrey Carr has suggested, we have a mountain of theory built on a molehill of evidence. Or as Martin Rees has put it, our present satisfaction with our state of understanding may reflect the paucity of the data rather than the excellence of the theory. This uncertainty applies, incidentally, to relatively nearby things as much as to the distant edges of the universe. As Donald Goldsmith notes, when astronomers say that the galaxy M87 is 60 million light-years away, what they really mean, but do not often stress to the general public, is that it is somewhere between 40 million and 90 million light-years away. Not quite the same thing. For the universe at large, matters are naturally magnified. Bearing all that in mind, the best bets these days for the age of the universe seem to be fixed on a range of about 12 billion to 13.5 billion years. But we remain a long way from unanimity. One interesting, recently suggested theory is that the universe is not nearly as big as we thought, that when we peer into the distance, some of the galaxies we see may simply be reflections, ghost images created by rebounded light. The fact is, there is a great deal, even at quite a fundamental level, that we don't know, not least what the universe is made of. When scientists calculate the amount of matter needed to hold things together, they always come up desperately short. It appears that at least 90% of the universe, and perhaps as much as 99%, is composed of Fritz Zwicky's dark matter, stuff that is, by its nature, invisible to us. It is slightly galling to think that we live in a universe that, for the most part, we can't even see. But there you are. At least the names for the two main possible culprits are entertaining. They are said to be either WIMPs, WIMPs, for weakly interacting massive particles, which is to say specks of invisible matter left over from a Big Bang, or MACHOs, machos, for massive compact halo objects, really just another name for black holes, brown dwarfs, and other very dim stars. Particle physicists have tended to favor the particle explanation of WIMPs, astrophysicists the stellar explanation of machos. For a time, machos had the upper hand, but not nearly enough of them were found, so sentiment swung back toward WIMPs, but with the problem that no WIMP has ever been found. Because they are weakly interacting, they are, assuming they even exist, very hard to detect. Cosmic rays would cause too much interference. So scientists must go deep underground. 1 kilometer underground, cosmic bombardments would be 1/1,000,000th what they would be on the surface. But even when all these are added in, 2/3 of the universe is still missing from the balance sheet, as one commentator has put it. For the moment, we might very well call them dunnos, for dark, unknown, non-reflective, non-detectable objects somewhere. Recent evidence suggests that not only are the galaxies of the universe racing away from us, but that they are doing so at a rate that is accelerating. This is counter to all expectations. It appears that the universe may not only be filled with dark matter, but with dark energy. Scientists sometimes also call it vacuum energy, or more exotically, quintessence. Whatever it is, it seems to be driving an expansion that no one can altogether account for. The theory is that empty space isn't so empty at all. There are particles of matter and antimatter popping into existence and popping out again, and that these are pushing the universe outward at an accelerating rate. Improbably enough, the one thing that resolves all this is Einstein's cosmological constant, the little piece of math he dropped into the general theory of relativity to stop the universe's presumed expansion, and called the biggest blunder of my life. It now appears that he may have gotten things right after all. The upshot of all this is that we live in a universe whose age we can't quite compute, surrounded by stars whose distances we don't altogether know, filled with matter we can't identify, operating in conformance with physical laws whose properties we don't truly understand. And on that rather unsettling note, let's return to planet Earth, and consider something that we do understand, though by now you perhaps won't be surprised to hear that we don't understand it completely, and what we do understand, we haven't understood for long. 12. The Earth Moves. In one of his last professional acts before his death in 1955, Albert Einstein wrote a short but glowing foreword to a book by a geologist named Charles Hapgood entitled Earth's Shifting Crust, A Key to Some Basic Problems of Earth Science. Hapgood's book was a steady demolition of the idea that continents were in motion. In a tone that all but invited the reader to join him in a tolerant chuckle, Hapgood observed that a few gullible souls had noticed an apparent correspondence in shape between certain continents. It would appear, he went on, that South America might be fitted together with Africa, and so on. It is even claimed that rock formations on opposite sides of the Atlantic match. Mr. Hapgood briskly dismissed any such notions, noting that the geologists K.E. Castor and J.C. Mendes had done extensive fieldwork on both sides of the Atlantic and had established beyond question that no such similarities existed. Goodness knows what outcrops Messrs. Castor and Mendes had looked at, because in fact many of the rock formations on both sides of the Atlantic are the same. Not just very similar, but the same. This was not an idea that flew with Mr. Hapgood or many other geologists of his day. The theory Hapgood alluded to was one first propounded in 1908 by an amateur American geologist named Frank Bursley Taylor. Taylor came from a wealthy family and had both the means and freedom from academic constraints to pursue unconventional lines of inquiry. He was one of those struck by the similarity in shape between the facing coastlines of Africa and South America. But from this observation, he developed the idea that the continents had once slid around. He suggested, presciently as it turned out, that the crunching together of continents could have thrust up the world's mountain chains. He failed, however, to produce much in the world.